Good evening, everyone. It's 8:30 on Friday night. At least it was the last time I looked. This is Barry Gray speaking from the studios of WOR in New York. And each Friday night at this time, we convene at these microphones with people from the political, theatrical, or sporting worlds and discuss things that have happened in the preceding week in the news and in their various fields or callings. We are expecting momentarily the very wonderful pianist and performer, Miss Hazel Scott, and friend husband Adam Clayton Powell, a congressman from one of New York's most popular districts. And at the microphone across from me, we have a television and radio actress, Miss Hope Miller, who has appeared so many times on the Theater Guild of the Air, the Philco Playhouse, and who has just completed a motion picture, and with a fervent prayer that it shall not be, and it's called Death Trap. Miss Miller, good evening.
Hello, Barry.
Hope, if I may, the informality, I'd like to say real quick that the big news stories tonight, just off the teletypes, are the steel strike, the civil rights story keeps pounding on, and in tonight's, last night's, and the night before newspapers, that's illiterate as can be, but you know what I mean. The night before, there's stories about Lena Horne's series of suits against various Chicago, Omaha, and Kansas City restaurants because of their refusal to admit her. And I'd like to talk about one,
yes, I've
two,
been reading
or three.
About those.
What about the steel strike? What do you think?
Well, all I know is, I mean, I've been reading about the fact-finding board's findings, and I've read, of course, of the U.S. Steel and Mr. Fairless's refusal to accede to those demands, and the idea that U.S. Steel doesn't want to bear the entire brunt of the pension, and I read about the package, which I believe they have offered 10 cents an hour, and that the worker should make up the difference, which is, of course, not what the fact-finding board established.
How do you feel about it personally?
Well,
putting you on the spot.
Putting me on the spot. I really am an actress. It's a little far afield for me, but personally, I think U.S. Steel can probably afford, let's say, to accede to the...
When you say, Hope, that you're an actress, I should say that oft times at these microphones, and I might add that's probably what makes it different, I ask actors and actresses to talk about things that are completely far afield, because... most people on the outside don't realize that theatrical people are human beings and read the newspapers
and
feel very strongly the things that appear on the first, second, and third pages and not the theatrical pages and the sports reviews.
That's very true, but our opinions are really just the opinions of private citizens, and they don't actually carry the weight of informed observers.
I'm not asking it to carry weight. I'm just asking it as a private citizen's opinion. About the steel strike, I'd like to make an opinion, if I may. I feel, first off, that the union is absolutely right, based on many precedents, but most recently the precedent set by the Ford Motor Company. I've said many, many times in the past that I feel that the people that have been attacked so many times as labor leaders in the United States are in truth the people most times that are carrying forward this great battle of labor. It's not a question of labor getting everything and manufacturers or capital getting nothing. It's a question of each getting some share of the balance. I feel that and have felt for a long time that the men that work and work very hard at the machines across the country and around the world deserve some reward at the end of 25 or 30 years of service, because actually, what with salaries, taxes, Social Security, etc., there is so little left that I doubt if anyone at the average and normal wage paid today can save enough to retire, as most of the executives can. And it isn't a question of making the fellow that has the initiative and has formed the company and gone to the top. It isn't a question of making him become as poor or as poorly off as the people that work for him. It's a question of what's right is right.
That's right. Barry, I'd like to ask you a question. I know that the U.S. Steel Company said that when they submitted the case to the fact-finding board, they did not obligate themselves, or they weren't bound to agree with the findings. Mm. Well, when one submits a case to arbitration or to a fact-finding board, don't they usually accept?
Well, they have. There is, of course, the precedent. The presidential fact-finding board has no legal power of demanding.
Yes, I understand, to enforce any decision.
But their recommendations are usually accepted. There was a case of one airline in the South. They are an interstate line. They operate out of New York. And there was a case where one of their pilots was fired. And the pilot objected. The Airline Pilots Association also objected, and there was a big hassle for many, many months. And finally, President Truman's fact-finding board stepped in and made recommendations that were subsequently followed out. And that has gone back through the months of this activity. I do believe that the strongest precedent set is the one by the Ford Motor Company. I think that the pensions that are being asked today by unions are only right and fair. They've been a long time coming, but it's only another advance for the people that are called labor in the United States. I think that going back 30 or 40 years, there are each step along the way has been fought just as strenuously as U.S. Steel is fighting this battle tonight. But ultimately, the will of the people has been borne out. The pensions are, it's just another step, like the eight-hour day or the five-day week.
Yes, those all were decided upon in the same way that this very issue is being fought.
One of these death
by
bites.
A test case.
What do you think of the Ford plan, by the way?
I really don't know too much about that. I was going to ask you about the Ford pension plan.
Incidentally, while I was... While we were talking, we have a bulletin from the WOR newsroom. President Philip Murray of the CIO United Steelworkers Union has just ordered the nation's steelworkers to strike at 1 minute after midnight. And in the door from the newsroom comes the nationally known pianist and concert artist, Miss Hazel Scott. Miss Scott, this is Miss Miller.
How do you do, Miss Scott?
What happened to the husband?
We just put the radio on in the car. Since the car couldn't move anyway with 40
was
seconds
of traffic.
Oh,
it is incredible today, isn't it?
It's the world worst.
I'm terribly sorry that you were late, and yet, actually, we were just talking about steel strikes and stuff, and I was about to get my teeth into the real beef of the night just at this point, and with your advent into the studio, the timing is right. You've probably read, Miss Scott, about Lena Horne having tried to get into a Chicago restaurant, I believe it was, and they refused her admittance. And she has threatened to sue. I understand that somewhat the same story happened to you.
Here we go again. Oh, yes.
Tell us about...
Anything happened to me? Well, it's, I'll try to be very brief and say what I can without doing anything that my lawyer cautioned me against. First of all, he said, the first rule is don't talk about the case.
Uh-huh.
But we were on our way to Spokane. I was on this long tour during the blizzard of last winter. And we were coming from somewhere in Idaho, Pocatello or something, through there. And we got snowed under completely. Ah, here comes husband man.
He's a big guy.
He's huge, isn't he?
Congressman, if you'll sit over here, please, next to Miss Miller. We're short one microphone. We didn't know whether you were going to show or not. And
that's
I understand
right.
That the traffic kept you away.
That's one of O'Dwyer's projects, tearing up 40 seconds. Just 10 minutes.
This is Miss Miller.
Hello.
We were talking about the steel strike, and they've just ordered the strike after midnight. And then I turned to your wife, and I asked her about her opinion on the Lena Horne case, and she was telling me what had happened during the great blizzard of 48, I believe it was.
49. February.
January 49. Go ahead.
So we were on our way to Spokane for a date there. And I missed two dates en route, and we were sort of stuck in the... slide, you know. It wasn't that it was snowing, it was just that it would blow, you see, these great winds, and they weren't used to very much snow out there. And people would come in with snowplows trying to dig us out, and nothing would happen. Finally, they decided the only thing to do was put the Spokane passengers on a bus, which they did, a Greyhound bus, you know. And I said, oh, brother, here we go. I got out of this nice drawing room where I'd been sleeping with my coat on, because we had no heat, and I had a temperature of 103, and we get into the bus, and I'm all muffled up, and I look horrible and feel worse. And we go, I forget how many miles it is from LeGrand, I think it was.
LeGrand, Nebraska?
Oregon. To Pasco, Washington. Where we stop for lunch. And we go in, we hadn't eaten anything at all, my companion and myself, Mrs. Wolf, and we go up and we ask for food. I mean, everybody goes in, it's just a little place, you know. We ask for food and looking at the menu over to see what we want, and suddenly this cute little waitress, she's a cute little blonde thing, came over and she said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't serve colored people. I mean, in the state of Washington, you know, look, if I were in Georgia, I wouldn't go in the first place. I'd carry a hot dog in my pocket, you know, my mink.
I tell you, in the state of Georgia, you'd be a lot better off carrying the hot dog in your pocket. You can't trust anything down there.
Exactly.
The thing is, about the South, I give the South more credit because the South is honest.
You have a point, Congressman. I tell you, you might be surprised at this. We at these microphones in the South have been talking about these things quite often. And I will say this for the Southerner. He is very definite about his opinions. He doesn't believe in certain things, and he says so very vociferously.
Your face.
It's right. Okay. It's the it's some of the quasi characters in the North who claim to be civil rights patrons and claim this and claim that and talk about our great democratic life and yet do things like your wife is talking about.
Yeah.
And the Lena Horne incident.
In Georgia, you'd have known where you stood.
Exactly.
Incidentally, have you seen the motion picture Pinky?
Haven't seen it. We were invited by Mr. Scorris to a preview that he had, but I had to go to Washington. She was tired of television. Haven't seen it.
You've got to see it. Saw it last night, and I think, as a matter of fact, Miss Miller did too. I think that it's a tremendous motion picture, and it's very controversial because at the end of the motion picture where Pinky, who is light enough to pass as white, decides to rejoin her people, it leaves you up in the air, and you wonder whether she's doing the right thing or the wrong thing. Everybody goes out of the
motion. That's right. Everybody was leaving the theater yesterday saying, mumbling. I wouldn't have done that. She shouldn't have done that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed some of the notices said that there would be two camps, two schools of thought on the ending.
I want to ask you, Congressman, do you think that your wife or Miss Horne are right in suing on a situation like this? Do you think that's going to cure the situation, or do you think that education is the basis of the whole problem?
Every American citizen is right whenever they try to secure the rights the Constitution says they should have, whether it's black or white, whether it's civil or criminal.
Well, of course, Congressman, I've said this too. You know, the President of the United States has come out for civil rights, and I'm for it. But actually, the Civil Rights Bill is nothing more than a reaffirmation of the Bill of Rights. There isn't any real need for a fight on civil rights. We already have in our Constitution and Bill of Rights the civil rights legislation.
The only thing is, you see, first, I'm the author of nearly every civil rights bill. I was the author of them before Mr. Truman was president.
Right.
I wrote them in January when Mr. Roosevelt was president. And the only difference is the present civil rights bills have teeth in them, while our amendments to the Constitution do not. For instance, the FEPC, there's definite teeth. There's a fine and imprisonment, that sort of thing. Anti-lynching, likewise.
I think that the biggest point to be presented with civil rights is the point that I'd like to make now. Most people don't realize that it is not a bill that concerns only the Negro. It's a bill that concerns every individual in the United States, and I've used this as an example. If you're a Catholic and you live in Boston, you're in pretty good shape because in Boston, the Catholics are in the majority, the Irish Catholics. If you are a Jew and you live in New York City, you are again in the majority. If you're an Indian and you live in Arizona, you're in the majority group. If you're a Negro and live in one section of Chicago, you are in the majority group, or in New York's Harlem. But take any one of those individuals that I've mentioned and move them to a section of the country where they become a minority and they become discriminated. They become a member of a discriminated group and therefore need civil rights because there is a great deal of discrimination against Boston Catholics. There is discrimination against Arizona Indians, against New York Jews, and most people think that it just has to do with a Negro from Georgia. It's not so at all.
Barry, I know that some states do have civil rights laws as is. There are laws against discrimination in public places, aren't there, Dr. Powell?
Oh, yeah.
In about 16 states or so now?
16 states have civil rights as regards public places, and then there are 14 that have civil rights as regards employment, FEPCs. But some vary as regards enforcement power. And if you have the law without the enforcement power, you're not getting anywhere. You're just rewriting in different words, as you said,
the Constitution, Barry,
the
Bill of Rights.
That's right.
Well, then when it comes back to Miss Horne suing, actually, if a Negro or a Jew or any other minority race member is barred...
Well, let's stop right there. All people in the United States are minorities,
in certain regions,
depending on where they live.
Well, I'm taking minorities that have most frequently been barred from, let us say, hotels.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, the hotel or the restaurant that refuses them admittance is really transgressing a law that the state legislature has passed. And in suing, you're merely emphasizing the fact that this is an already established law that has been broken.
In fact, you're law-abiding if you sue.
That's right, you are. Because if you're going to... condone breaking one law, where will it end? How can you say this law we can break, but others must not be broken? It's just bringing it out in the open.
That's all very true, but I wonder if perhaps the basis of the whole problem is a little more education. I think a few more motion pictures like Pinky or Lost Boundaries and a few more people like Congressman Powell and so on. People that's my argument, I might add, with Paul Robeson. I think that that Paul Robeson made a tragic public relations error. I think that Robeson as an individual could have done a lot more good by attempting to show people around the world that he, and not as a Negro, but as a great singer, regardless of his race, was perfectly willing to accept his responsibilities and in turn raise the level of his own people to a still higher one, as the good doctor has, and Hazel Scott and Lena Horne and Jackie Robinson, and you can go on and on. You see, I basically am against, we're wandering here, but I get very angry when they say Jackie Robinson or Joe Louis, a credit to his race.
I get pretty hot
at that, because you shouldn't say Joe Louis a credit to his race. Joe Louis, boxer, champion.
Human race. Human
yeah,
race.
Joe Louis, championship boxer. Jackie Robinson, good ball player. Paul Robeson, great singer.
Without the qualifying adjective.
It's like picking up a newspaper and you see that four hoodlums broke into a jewelry store in Harlem. It will say, four hoodlums, Joe Doakes, Negro.
Yes.
Well, you might just as well put Joe Doakes, Catholic, or Joe Doakes, Jew, or Joe Doakes, Italian. You go on
and on. Or Joe Doakes, Anglo-Saxon.
Right. The whole thing, the whole thing right from the beginning is un-American. These fight announcers and so on, they start with that stuff. It's ridiculous. But getting back to Robeson, I believe he made a great public relations error, and I'm sure that the people here at the table probably agree with me. Do you have anything to say about that, Congressman?
Well, I know as regards Paul, I think Paul has gotten to the place where he's awfully frustrated. He wants to see come to pass overnight that which cannot come to pass overnight. And the only difference between Paul and probably all of us is that he's willing to take any method to bring it to pass, and we don't want to take any method which will leave wounds that will take longer to heal than the problem will be solved.
Mm.
Such as the South and the Civil War, for instance.
Right.
I think emancipation of the slaves could have been accomplished much more easily and definitely in long terms, much more lasting, with less bitterness, without war. I'm a pacifist.
You make a point, right. that we had a big hassle here last Friday night. I had a guest.
What?
A hassle.
What's that now?
An argument.
Oh.
I remember
that makes money on the floor of Congress.
We had a big disagreement here last Friday night. I had Canada Lee on as my guest, and I guess I disagree with
him. Oh, I received letters of protest. I brought one with me to give you.
About Canada's statements?
You were a very, very bad boy with Canada, this lady said. I don't know who she is.
Well, there's probably a few people that think Canada was a bad boy with me, but actually Canada and I are longtime friends, and although we disagree probably politically, that doesn't change my feelings in a friendly vein towards
him. What are his political views?
I don't know. We never did settle that in 25 minutes. And as a matter of fact, I don't think he found out what mine were either. I prefer to feel that Canada is probably, let me say, more liberal than I think we should be at this time. I think that Canada probably feels that things can be done in a hurry. And my argument was to him that things cannot be done in a hurry. We had a big argument after the show, not Canada and myself, but over the dinner table, a lot of people were sitting around that had been listening to the broadcast, and they were talking about the Emancipation Proclamation and civil rights and so forth. And there's one very big thing that a lot of people forget. Anybody can pass a law. It's really a cinch. That's mm-hmm. the easiest part of the job, is to get the law through. Public acceptance of a law makes it still another thing. If the public doesn't accept the law, nothing is ever going to happen with it. And that's what happened with the Emancipation Proclamation. Instead of making an overnight thing out of it, there should have been a long period of education. How, I don't know. But somewhere...
Oh. That should have been the first FEPC, then, Fair Employment Practice.
probably. But education is the root of the whole thing. You can't raise someone, particularly in the South, for 35 or 40 years and teach them one method of life and then suddenly put a law on their life and say, this is it, or you go to jail. It just doesn't work out in practice. The people in Florida, for example, in one section, Miami Beach, they have laws against restricted hotels. They have laws allow entertainers to sing and dance, do anything they want, regardless of race, color, or creed. Directly across Biscayne Bay in Miami, you find an entirely different situation. One is still living under the precepts mm-hmm. of the South. The other has become northern or modified or modern. And this has taken a long time. I think education is the only answer. I don't think that legal rulings are going to help it.
Well, just as when a manufacturer comes out with a new product, he spends a lot of money educating the public to an acceptance of that product and to an understanding. Just passing a law, if the public is not educated to accept it and to understand it, The law in itself has no power.
Oh, may I interrupt? Pardon me. Talking about education and passing laws, this all is very interesting to me. But would you mind telling me how anything is ever going to be accomplished if we just talk about educating people and there is no method of educating them? Whenever you open your mouth, you're either a red or you're propagandizing for some specific purpose.
Well, that's awfully easy to combat if the balance of free speech is watched. I was going to switch the subject for just a couple of seconds and talk about education in another light. Right now, we're going through a period of labor strife. Most of the people in the United States, when they hear the name John L. Lewis or they hear the name Petrillo or any other labor leader, their hair stands on end because they've been reading newspapers that tell them that Lewis and Petrillo are bad guys. These people have not taken the trouble to investigate the reasons for the being of Petrillo and Lewis. Now the same comes true with the Negro problem. If people were rational, if people were told the truth in newspapers and in magazines and on radio, we wouldn't have to pass civil rights laws. I think that getting back to Pinky and Lost Boundaries, I think that a Pinky and a Lost Boundaries motion picture can do more good than 94 hours of conversation at a microphone.
Precisely. But you heard the people coming out. Some people who said, "Oh, things like that don't really happen." There are some people who walk out of the theater saying those things were exaggerated.
There again, though, Hope, you're not going to cure the stupidity of an audience of 5,000 in an hour and a half motion picture, but you're going to begin to wear down some of the resistance and begin to make them think. I don't care what they think when they get through, but at least you've made the gray cells operate. There was never a Southerner in the world or a bigot in the world that could stand up against the honest arguments of race and religion. Their only method of attack is fighting in dark closets with smear campaigns and dirty words and so on, as portrayed in the motion picture.
Of course, you've got to have, in addition to your education, however, law, wisely administered, because there is always, as there is in the criminal world, civil criminals, criminally minded, socially criminal minded, and they just have to be brought into the correct boundaries of society, the same as we would with a murderer or a thief. There are murderers and thieves in our social world who are absolutely can't be reached through education.
Well, don't misunderstand me. I'm not against civil rights. I'm for civil rights and have said so many times for 2 years on Southern radio that I'm quite sure that most of the Klan are very unhappy with me, which is a compliment to the program. What I'm saying is this, that it's really redundant. The civil rights legislation would not be necessary if we live up to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in the first place. We are a people that tell the world that we are a great, great country, and we are. We are 98% of the time, but the Achilles heel and the whole operation and the whole business of our civilization is the fact that we have certain standards for certain groups of people. We wouldn't have to worry about the inroads of fascism and communism and reactionaryism or all the other isms if our democracy were working as perfectly as it could if we all lived up to the precepts of the Bill of Rights and the Four Freedoms and so on. It sounds corny,
right,
but it's true.
Well, when I was conducting my FEPC hearings in the House of Representatives, I forget who was before me. I think it was Martin Quigley, the Catholic publisher of a Hollywood trade paper. Quigley has offices over in Radio City.
Yes.
I said to him, I said, no American ever becomes a communist unless democracy fails him.
Very good statement. I'm awfully sorry, Congressman, but we have to get off the air. I'm sorry you were late.
I wish
we had an hour and a half more. I've been talking with Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, Ms. Hazel Scott, Hope Miller, television, radio actress, and motion picture actress. This is the Barry Gray Show. I'll see you Sunday night at midnight with a grab bag full of guests and some surprises. And this is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Yes, WOR will take you out to every one of the 1949 World Series ball games for the 11th straight year in exclusive play-by-play radio broadcasts. For the World Series, it's WOR, WOR-FM, and WOR-TV, Channel 9, your World Series stations in New York.
On WOR-TV, Channel 9, WOR and WOR-FM, New York.